4. Has all life descended from a common ancestor? Darwin thought that all life might be traced to a common ancestor. He imagined that the history of life on Earth resembled a grand tree. Later, others believed that this tree of life started as a single trunk with the first simple cells. New species branched from the trunk and continued to divide into limbs, or families of plants and animals, and then into twigs, all the species within the families of plants and animals alive today. Is that really what happened? What do many scientists claim? Many give the impression that the fossil record supports the theory of a common origin for life. They also claim that because all living things use similar computer language, or DNA, that all life must have evolved from a common ancestor. What does the Bible say? The Genesis account states that plants, sea creatures, land animals, and birds were created according to their kinds. Genesis 1, 12, and 20 through 25. This description allows for variation within a kind, but it implies that there are fixed barriers separating the different kinds. The Bible account of creation also leads us to expect that new types of creatures would appear in the fossil record suddenly and fully formed. What does the evidence reveal? Does the evidence support the Bible's description of events, or was Darwin correct? What have discoveries over the past 150 years revealed? Darwin's tree chopped down. In recent years, scientists have been able to compare the genetic codes of dozens of different single-celled organisms, as well as those of plants and animals. They assumed that such comparisons would confirm the branching tree of life proposed by Darwin. However, this has not been the case. What has the research uncovered? In 1999, biologist Malcolm S. Gordon wrote, "Life appears to have had many origins. The base of the universal tree of life appears not to have been a single root. Is there evidence that all the major branches of life are connected to a single trunk, as Darwin believed?" Gordon continues, "The traditional version of the theory of common descent apparently does not apply to kingdoms as presently recognized. It probably does not apply to many, if not all, phyla, and possibly also not to many classes within the phyla." The footnote reads, "The biological term phyla, singular phylum, refers to a large group of animals that have the same distinctive body plan. One way that scientists classify all living things is by a seven-step system in which each step is more specific than the one before it. Step 1 is kingdom, the broadest category. Then come the categories phylum, class, order, family, genus, and species. For example, the horse is categorized in the following way: kingdom, Animalia; phylum, Chordata; class, Mammalia; order, Perissodactyla; family, Equidae; genus, Equus; species, Caballus." End of footnote. Recent research continues to contradict Darwin's theory of common descent. For example, in 2009, an article in New Scientist magazine quoted evolutionary scientist Eric Batest as saying, "We have no evidence at all that the tree of life is a reality." The same article quotes evolutionary biologist Michael Rose as saying, "The tree of life is being politely buried. We all know that. What's less accepted is that our whole fundamental view of biology needs to change." The footnote reads, "It should be noted that neither the New Scientist article, nor Batest, nor Rose mean to suggest that the theory of evolution is wrong. Their point, rather, is that Darwin's proposed tree of life, a mainstay of his theory, is not supported by the evidence. Such scientists still seek other explanations involving evolution. End of footnote. What about the fossil record? Many scientists point to the fossil record as support for the idea that life emerged from a common origin. They argue, for example, that the fossil record documents the notion that fish became amphibians and reptiles became mammals. What, though, does the fossil evidence really show? Instead of finding the gradual unfolding of life, says evolutionary paleontologist David M. Raup, what geologists of Darwin's time and geologists of the present day actually find is a highly uneven or jerky record. That is, species appear in the sequence very suddenly, show little or no change during their existence in the record, then abruptly go out of the record. In reality, the vast majority of fossils show stability among types of creatures over extensive amounts of time. The evidence does not show them evolving from one type into another. Unique body plans appear suddenly. New features appear suddenly. For example, bats with sonar and echolocation systems appear with no obvious link to a more primitive ancestor. In fact, more than half of all the major divisions of animal life seem to have appeared in a relatively short period of time. Because many new and distinct life forms appear so suddenly in the fossil record, paleontologists refer to this period as the Cambrian explosion. When was the Cambrian period? Let us assume that the estimates of researchers are accurate. In that case, the history of the Earth could be represented by a timeline that stretches the length of a soccer field. At that scale, you would have to walk about 7/8 of the way down the field before you would come to what paleontologists call the Cambrian period. During a small segment of that period, the major divisions of animal life show up in the fossil record. How suddenly do they appear? As you walk down the soccer field, all those different creatures pop up in the space of less than one step. The relatively sudden appearance of these diverse life forms is causing some evolutionary researchers to question the traditional version of Darwin's theory. For example, in an interview in 2008, evolutionary biologist Stuart Newman discussed the need for a new theory of evolution that could explain the sudden appearance of novel forms of life. He said, "The Darwinian mechanism that's used to explain all evolutionary change will be relegated, I believe, to being just one of several mechanisms, maybe not even the most important when it comes to understanding macroevolution, the evolution of major transitions in body type." Problems with the proof. What, though, of the fossils that are used to show fish changing into amphibians and reptiles into mammals? Do they provide solid proof of evolution in action? Upon closer inspection, several problems become obvious. First, the comparative size of the creatures placed in the reptile to mammal sequence is sometimes misrepresented in textbooks. Rather than being similar in size, some creatures in the series are huge, while others are small. A second, more serious challenge is the lack of proof that those creatures are somehow related. Specimens placed in the series are often separated by what researchers estimate to be millions of years. Regarding the time spans that separate many of these fossils, zoologist Henry G. says, "The intervals of time that separate the fossils are so huge that we cannot say anything definite about their possible connection through ancestry and descent." The footnote reads, "Henry G. does not suggest that the theory of evolution is wrong. His comments are made to show the limits of what can be learned from the fossil record." End of footnote. Commenting on the fossils of fish and amphibians, biologist Malcolm S. Gordon states that the fossils found represent only a small, possibly quite unrepresentative, sample of the biodiversity that existed in these groups at those times. He further says, "There is no way of knowing to what extent, if at all, those specific organisms were relevant to later developments, or what their relationships might have been to each other." The footnote reads, Malcolm S. Gordon supports the teaching of evolution. End of footnote. What does the film really show? An article published in National Geographic in 2004 likened the fossil record to a film of evolution from which 999 of every 1,000 frames have been lost on the cutting room floor. Consider the implications of that illustration. Imagine that you found 100 frames of a feature film that originally had 100,000 frames. How would you determine the plot of the movie? You might have a preconceived idea, but what if only 5 of the 100 frames you found could be organized to support your preferred plot, while the other 95 frames tell a very different story? Would it be reasonable to assert that your preconceived idea of the movie was right because of the 5 frames? Could it be that you placed the 5 frames in the order you did because it suited your theory? Would it not be more reasonable to allow the other 95 frames to influence your opinion? How does that illustration relate to the way evolutionists view the fossil record? For years, researchers did not acknowledge that the vast majority of fossils, the 95 frames of the movie, showed that species change very little over time. Why the silence about such important evidence? Author Richard Morris says, "Apparently, paleontologists had adopted the orthodox idea of gradual evolutionary change and had held on to it, even when they discovered evidence to the contrary. They had been trying to interpret fossil evidence in terms of accepted evolutionary ideas." What about evolutionists today? Could it be that they continue to place fossils in a certain order, not because such a sequence is well supported by the majority of fossil and genetic evidence, but because doing so is in harmony with currently accepted evolutionary ideas? What do you think? Which conclusion fits the evidence best? Consider the facts we have discussed so far. The first life on Earth was not simple. The odds against even the components of a cell arising by chance are astronomical. DNA, the computer program or code that runs the cell, is incredibly complex and gives evidence of a genius that far surpasses any program or information storage system produced by humans. Genetic research shows that life did not originate from a single common ancestor. In addition, major groups of animals appear suddenly in the fossil record. In light of these facts, do you think it is reasonable to conclude that the evidence is in harmony with the Bible's explanation of the origin of life? Many people, however, assert that science contradicts much of what the Bible says about creation. Is that true? What does the Bible really say?
The following is supplementary information. Facts and questions. Fact. Two of evolution's fundamental ideas, that life has a common origin and that major new body types appear as a result of the slow accumulation of small changes, are being challenged by researchers who do not support the Bible account of creation. Question. Given the controversy over these pillars of Darwin's theory, can his version of evolution honestly be referred to as scientific fact? Fact. All living organisms share similarly designed DNA, the computer language or code that governs much of the shape and function of their cell or cells. Question. Could this similarity exist not because they had the same ancestor, but because they had the same designer? What about human evolution? Look up the topic of human evolution in many textbooks and encyclopedias, and you will see a series of pictures. On one side, a stooped, ape-like creature, followed by creatures that have progressively more upright posture and larger heads. At the end stands modern man. Such renderings, along with sensational media reports of the discovery of so-called missing links, give the impression that there is ample evidence that man evolved from from ape-like creatures. Are such assertions based on solid evidence? Consider what evolutionary researchers say about the following topics. The footnote reads, Note, none of the researchers quoted in this box believe in the Bible's teaching of creation. All accept the teaching of evolution. End of footnote. What the fossil evidence actually shows. Fact. At the beginning of the 20th century, all the fossils that were used to support the theory that humans and apes evolved from a common ancestor could fit on a billiard table. Since then, the number of fossils used to support that theory has increased. Now it is claimed that they would fill a railroad boxcar. However, the vast majority of those fossils consist only of single bones and isolated teeth. Complete skulls, let alone complete skeletons, are rare. Question. Has the increased number of fossils attributed to the human family tree settled the question among evolutionary experts as to when and how humans evolved from ape-like creatures? Answer. No. In fact, the opposite is true. When it comes to how these fossils should be classified, Robin Derricor of the University of New South Wales, Australia, wrote in 2009, Perhaps the only consensus now is that there is no consensus. In 2007, the science journal Nature published an article by the discoverers of another claimed link in the evolutionary tree, saying that nothing is known about when or how the human line actually emerged from that of apes. Jola Janesh, a researcher at the Department of Biological Anthropology, Eötvös-Loránd University, Hungary, wrote in 2002, The classification and the evolutionary place of hominid fossils has been under constant debate. The footnote reads, The term hominid is used to describe what evolutionary researchers feel make up the human family and prehistoric human-like species. End of footnote. This author also states that the fossil evidence gathered so far brings us no closer to knowing exactly when, where, or how humans evolved from ape-like creatures. Announcements of missing links. Fact. The media often widely broadcasts the announcement that a new missing link has been discovered. For example, in 2009, a fossil dubbed Ida was unveiled with what one journal called rock star hype. Publicity included this headline in the Guardian newspaper of the United Kingdom, or UK. Fossil Ida, extraordinary find, is missing link in human evolution. However, just days later, the UK science journal New Scientist said, Ida is not a missing link in human evolution. Question. Why is each unveiling of a new missing link given wide media attention, whereas the removal of that fossil from the family tree is hardly mentioned? Answer. Regarding those who make these discoveries, Robin Derricor, quoted earlier, says, The leader of a research team may need to overemphasize the uniqueness and drama of a discovery in order to attract research funding from outside the conventional academic sources, and they will certainly be encouraged in this by the print and electronic media, looking for a dramatic story. Textbook drawings and models of ape men. Fact. Depictions in textbooks and museums of the so-called ancestors of humans are often shown with specific facial features, skin colour, and amount of hair. These depictions usually show the older ancestors with monkey-like features, and the ones supposedly closer to humans with more human-like facial features, skin tone, and hair. Question. Can scientists reliably reconstruct such features based on the fossilized remains that they find? Answer. No. In 2003, forensics expert Carl N. Stephen, who works at the Department of Anatomical Sciences, the University of Adelaide, Australia, wrote, "The faces of earlier human ancestors cannot be objectively constructed or tested." He says that attempts to do so based on modern apes are likely to be heavily biased, grossly inaccurate, and invalid. His conclusion? Any facial reconstructions of earlier hominids are likely to be misleading. Determining intelligence by brain size. Fact. The brain size of a presumed ancestor of humans is one of the main ways by which evolutionists determine how closely or distantly the creature is supposed to be related to humans. Question. Is brain size a reliable indicator of intelligence? Answer. No. One group of researchers who used brain size to speculate which extinct creatures were more closely related to man admitted that in doing so, they often feel on shaky ground. Why? Consider the statement made in 2008 in Scientific American Mind. Scientists have failed to find a correlation between absolute or relative brain size and acumen among humans and other animal species. Neither have they been able to discern a parallel between wits and the size or existence of specific regions of the brain, excepting perhaps Broca's area, which governs speech in people. What do you think? Why do scientists line up the fossils used in the ape-to-man chain according to brain size, when it is known that brain size is not a reliable measure of intelligence? Are they forcing the evidence to fit their theory? And why are researchers constantly debating which fossils should be included in the human family tree? Could it be that the fossils they study are just what they appear to be, extinct forms of apes? What, though, about the human-like fossils of the so-called Neanderthals, often portrayed as proof that a type of ape man existed? Researchers are beginning to alter their view of what these actually were. In 2009, Milford H. Wilpuff wrote in the American Journal of Physical Anthropology that Neanderthals may have been a true human race. Honest observers readily recognize that egos, money, and the need for media attention influence the way that evidence for human evolution is presented. Are you willing to put your trust in such evidence?